for everyone you meet, even if they don't want it. What seems like cynicism or conceit is always a sign of things no eyes have seen or ears have heard. You don't know what wars are going on down where the spirit meets the bone. Ring the bell that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. It had been a strenuous season, but he had done well tending and caring for his crops. He worked himself hard, but that is what the job required. Early mornings, late nights, hot, and I mean hot, summer days. And there were mechanical issues, but he stayed focused and he got it done. He prepared the soil well, kept a close eye on the weather, and made adjustments throughout the season. It was finally time for Lane Unjum to bring in his crop of wheat and canola, when all of a sudden, his harvester caught fire. For those that don't know the price of farming equipment, and I know there are a couple here tuning in that actually do, it is an astronomical expense, a number that would make all of our jaws drop straight to the floor. But maybe even worse was that with no harvester, Lane had no way of bringing in the crop, and with it, a loss from selling the crop and all the resources he had invested in preparing and sustaining that crop throughout the season. Due to this catastrophic loss, and at the worst time of the year, Lane went into a cardiac arrest and was taken to the nearest hospital, where he received the care he needed and, thankfully, was quickly in stable condition. People will say what happened next was just folks being kind to their neighbor, and they're entitled to think that way. But I believe what happened next is nothing short of the love and compassion of God. In this little farming town of 1,000, farmers began to show up with all of their equipment. It was reported that nearly a dozen combines showed up, accompanied with farmers and their families. So many machines were on the field that some had to park on the outskirts and provide emotional support from a distance. Children were invited to help with the smaller tasks that they could. And although the article did not mention it, I imagine there was someone in that farming community who baked or cooked a delicious meal for those who were working that day. All brought what they could, their gifts, their talents, and resources to care for a member of their community that was in need. And this is the result. Within 7 hours, all 1,000 acres of crop was harvested. While this theme of a community that cares for one another shows up throughout the Bible, we find it here this morning in the second reading from a book that we often neglect, the book of Nehemiah. So you might be wondering a little bit about the context of Nehemiah. And so just to give you some framework, in 586 BCE, the Israelites were conquered by the Babylonian Empire. And as a result, Israel was destroyed, which included Jerusalem, where the temple was located. As a prize, the Babylonians took with them the elites, the higher-ups of Israelite society, as captives, including scholars, tradesmen, and politicians, all of whom could be used to beef up the empire's resources and their brains. In their imperial wake were villages pillaged and destroyed, leaving many people behind with little to no resources. 70 years pass. A new empire, the Assyrian Empire, conquers Babylon, and with a simple decree from Cyrus the Great, the Jewish captives are told they can go home. But it's really not home. considering many of them had never been to Israel before. Maybe a handful of elders were children in Israel at the time of exile, but it was a foreign land, a land that their ancestors knew. Regardless, it was their opportunity to build a new nation with the vision they had, with the God that rescued them from the Babylonians. As governor, Nehemiah oversaw the building, repairing, and restoration of Israel. And all 32 verses, which I'm sure Jack wishes he could have read all 32 of chapter 3, give a detailed account of those who showed up to help. Families show up and tackle certain projects, such as the fish gates or door hinges. Fathers and daughters make repairs on districts in Jerusalem in urgent need of fixing. And if we were to extend our reading by one more verse, we would have learned that the dung gate, that's right, the dung gate, the town dump, was in major need of renovations, which some people took up the call. The work was divided up and getting done, in community, side by side, in an effort to care for their buildings. But before we imagine the scene of people holding hands and a chorus of kumbaya, it is important to remember that this was not an easy moment for them. Again, they are political refugees, told to go back to a country they had never been to. And when they get there, they discover a crumbling infrastructure that could not support adequate housing, protection, or sanitation for their people. The work was tedious and strenuous. Oh, and let's not forget all those that the Babylonians did not take into captivity, left in Israel, and who found a way to survive, and now they have to deal with these strangers coming in saying, "We want to rebuild everything." And if you continue reading in the book, the tensions grow significantly, bordering on a civil war for those who belong and those who do not belong. So the circumstances are far from a romantic image of a mission trip or a service project, but the passage demonstrates that in uncertainty and disarray, the community comes together and shares the work that needs to be done. In my experience, whenever I have to work on a really difficult project, either physically or mentally intensive, I either grow closer with those I work with, or we might begin to butt heads. If those that I'm working with aren't pulling their fair share of the work or sitting off to the side while the rest of the group is hard at work, in many ways that hurts our relationship. It may require some healthy, honest confrontation. And in verse 5, Nehemiah keeps those who refuse to work accountable, calling out the officials that wouldn't help with their supervisors. But given the mood of this passage, this was rare. Most people worked together and contributed what they could. And I'd like to think that the result was not only building a dung gate, but building lasting relationships, a community that could overcome devastation, could find wholeness even when the world around them was in ruins. Here at Grace Church, we are not in ruins. Obviously, we are worshiping in this beautiful space, but we have had to make some repairs on our facilities. The parsonage has a new roof because it was leaking. The fireplace damper was replaced because it wasn't working right. And here at the church, the air conditioner has not been performing as it's needed to. But the work is getting done, and the Board of Business Affairs, as I'm looking out, is doing a wonderful job getting that stuff taken care of. But today we begin our 4-week stewardship campaign, and part of our task is to take care of our space, but it's also to be stewards of building relationship in our ministry as God calls us in this particular moment. We are called to think about the use of our time and talent, but especially our money and how we are stewards of building the kingdom around us. How are we sharing the work that needs to get done? How are we using our resources to care for the vulnerable, especially those who are crying out in need? No one needs reminding of everything that is going on in our world today. There is more work than we can possibly do in multiple lifetimes. Everything from soaring poverty rates to increasing eviction notices, leaving people without shelter, children going hungry, even in our own community, and climate change, which goes hand in hand with the prayers that we say every Sunday about these natural disasters in the South and on the West Coast. And this week, we are reminded yet again that the lethal force used against black bodies, often as a first resort, is left unaccountable by those who have sworn to protect and serve. This is the work. This is God's work as it was revealed through the prophets of old, who spoke of God's love for the most vulnerable. This is the work Jesus spoke of when he said, "Set the oppressed free," and taught us how to love our neighbor as ourselves. This is our work, and it is all around us. It's as if we find ourselves surrounded by heaps of rubble. How can we care for it all? How are we stewards, not simply of the building, but of building? Building relationships, building more equitable conditions for our neighbors, building opportunities for those in need. One reason Jessica and I moved from Columbia, Illinois, to Lancaster, Ohio, 7 months pregnant during a global pandemic, was because I read your church profile, and it was clear that this church gets it. You know what it is to see the tough work around you, and instead of being overwhelmed, you pick that one gate that needs repaired, and you show up and you work. You know that it takes working together in order to repair Israel, and that your peace is important for its restoration. And the story that moved me to submit my application was, I believe, an all-church meeting where you're having dialogue about whether to have the American flag in the sanctuary or not. And from that conversation was a discussion about becoming open and affirming. And a couple courageous young adults stood up and brought to your attention something in desperate need of renovation. A renovation I don't believe any other church in Lancaster has been doing. A church that declares this space is safe for all people, especially LGBTQIA persons, where it is assumed are not welcomed in church. You affirm that all people are loved by God, regardless of where they fall on the sexuality or gender spectrum. Not only loved, but precious in God's sight. It was not easy. And trust me, becoming open and affirming is an ongoing commitment that we will seek to live into more fully. But you got it done. You are building an inclusive church that actually lives what you say. All are welcome, and in this time, you knew that it was important to name people specifically, those who are neglected in society. Your ministry is building so much more. With your gifts to Maywood Mission and the collecting of winter coats, you are building relationship and giving resources to those who are in need or going through a rough time. Your gifts are restoring dignity. You are rebuilding confidence in those who are trying to get their feet back on the ground. You are very generous with your building, hosting Fairfield Strings, and now housing a preschool where kids get to walk up to this building and learn to love reading and learning about the world around them. Grace, you are doing the work, and I'm so happy to join you all in how God is already at work in this community. Of course, we know the work is not over. It never is. We know there is always something to fix. But together, as stewards of the building and of building possibilities for God to heal, to nurture, to love, there are real possibilities for our church and for our community. The farmers that showed up to help Lane bring in his crop not only showed up and gave their farming expertise, but they donated their use of machines. They paid for their gas. They donated so much for this kind gesture to be possible. So I invite you this week to reflect on all the wonderful things grace is doing or has done. Maybe reflect with someone else about noodle dinners past or the times or events when you felt God's will meshed with the mission of the church. Because this is what we are about. And in your discerning, think about the seeds being planted right now. Think about the possibilities for God to do a new thing in our midst. How will you pledge your time, talent, and resources, knowing that it is all needed and given out of God's grace? Thanks be to God. Amen.